I've got Walter Jenner sitting here with me. Thank you, Walter, and I'll let you introduce yourself if you don't mind.
Yeah, well, good morning, everybody. Good morning, Jeff. Thank you very much. Basically, as myself, I'm a soil microbiologist. Mm-hmm. Very small group of people into that area, mostly silently, obviously underground, right?
Yeah.
But it's pretty fundamental because it's that soil microbiology that drives our whole biosphere, a lot of living systems, drives the soil, and through the soil the hydrology, and through the hydrology our climate. So it's become really quite pivotal, cardinal now, to understand and to explore what's going on, you know, how we've impacted it, but also what can we do to help actually achieve things above the ground, you know, climate, food, futures, through the management of our soils.
Okay.
So as my soil background, yeah, look, as I said, I'm a soil microbiologist. I worked in CSIRO, you know, for quite a long time doing research in forestry, tropical crops and pastures, and soil division of soils. Worked overseas quite a bit, but and then with government in strategic policy innovation, but retired some 20-odd years ago because I wanted to get back to agricultural land management and formed a series of NGOs to do that, initially Healthy Soils Australia to actually bring that whole carbon story. You know, we were talking about CO2 emissions, but here's a massive potential to actually draw down, sequester more carbon dioxide back into soil, both to regenerate our landscape, but of course to address, help address climate.
Okay, so we'll just stop there because we're talking about some big issues there, perhaps even the biggest issue there, really. And I will just go back a little bit because, like most scientists, you're quite modest in how you introduce yourself. And I will note that you are an internationally recognised soil microbiologist, an innovation strategist, and co-founder of a group called Regenerate Earth, which is really what we'll start our discussion on now, which is, if you like, the heading over which some of those things you've just mentioned went on. So just to make it easier for all the novices out there, can you just tell us a little bit about what is Regenerate Earth as an organisation and sort of what it does.
Okay, very good. Regenerate Earth is, again, it's a small NGO, small in the sense we don't have major structures, but of course we've got outreach globally, and it's really looking at how do we regenerate soils, effectively how do we regenerate the Earth's soil carbon sponge, because as I mentioned before, that governs the hydrology of the landscape, all landscapes, and that hydrology governs, obviously, climate, the potential to cool the climate, which is absolutely there and real, our food production, our biodiversity, resilience, buffering from climate extremes. So it's really, you know, the soil is the point in nature which governs that. More fundamentally, it's our only point of agency. It's the only thing we as humans have got, in a sense, the levers. We control what happens to land. We control what happens to that soil. And through that, we have agency on influencing these global imperatives.
Yeah, so a lot of the problems, I suppose, that we've got these days is that depletion of soils and the overuse of soils and the loss of soil through erosion.
Total.
And whatever. So you're looking at turning around or at least addressing that, stopping doing the harm and starting to do some good.
And it's colossal. Again, we've been working with the UN in another aspect of our work. And see, we've turned 5 billion hectares, that's 40% of the global land surface, into man-made deserts and wasteland over the last 10,000 years through agriculture or bad agriculture, right? So that's 40%, and that desert and landscape is, of course, now heating up, re-radiating heat, eroding, and causing enormous climate impacts, but of course collapsing civilizations, because as basically the people degrade their soils, they can't feed themselves, they haven't got water, and they collapse. And the whole of archaeology is, in a sense, the chronology of 20-odd civilizations globally that have gone. Okay, so basically that's happening. But also now with us and our industrial agriculture, we cultivate, we burn, we over-fertilize, use pesticides, and so we're oxidizing, burning off the natural carbon in the soil, and we've degraded about half of the remaining arable lands, soil resources. Mm. So the UN says very clearly we perhaps have 60 harvests left before we globally also collapse because we won't be able to produce the food.
Right.
So it's pretty fundamental, yeah.
Yeah, so really it's quite ironic, isn't it, because all this attention that's been given to improving the productivity of soils in some instances has actually had the reverse effect in one sense, in at that industrial agriculture level, and seeking to extract the most sort of value and income from the land.
Look, it's always a balance between short-term extractive exploitation, we can accelerate that with, as we say, fertilizers, etc., and then the long-term building the structure and the health, which means really leaving carbon from plant biomass, leaving that carbon in the soil and turning it into stable soil carbon, which then builds a sponge and hydrology. It's quite interesting because where we live, Strzelecki came through here in the 1840s. He went on to then name Mount Kosciuszko and what have you, but he went here especially under Governor Gibbs' instruction to do a soil survey or landscape survey to look at its productivity for marketing Australia back into England. And he did soil samples, and the top soil samples had organic matter contents of 37%. And even the poorest soils had organic matter contents of 15%. Well, now we're lucky to get basically 2-3% organic matter contents in our surface soils. Most of Australia has, you know, carbon contents of about 0.5%. So we've, in a sense, burnt off the carbon in the soils, but that's caused the soils to collapse, effectively concreted them, made them impervious, and through that we've fundamentally changed the hydrology of the landscape. We don't have the water that we used to have in our landscape, but also fundamentally changed the climate. And our whole imperative and opportunity, because we can do it, is to actually change that process, rebuild soil carbon, rebuild soil health, and yet regenerate these soils, hydrology, climate, biosystems.
So how do we do that?
Well, it's very easy. We just do it as nature does. I mean, it's simply growing plants, but then, in a sense, ensuring that every piece of plant material that's at the moment wasted as litter and often burnt off the surface and goes back immediately to CO2, the alternative as in nature is to turn that into stable soil carbon through microbial biodecomposition. So it's effectively what we do with a compost heap. So it's really burning or compost, and it's really using the native organisms, the fungi particularly, re-enhancing their activity to put 60% or thereabouts of the carbon in biomass into that soil to rebuild the sponge and hydrology. And it's just changing management practices, just as profitable. I mean, it's profitably doing that in agriculture, but of course it's tailor-made to different soils, different sites, so the practices are local tailor-made practices.
And this needs to happen on that industrial scale that has caused the original
problems. It has to happen globally, yes, it has to, but it's really relevant because this affects your regional climate. We're not going to affect global CO2 levels just by our emission reductions, but yes, we can change the health of our landscapes regionally, globally, to change global climates. And as a case, we've done work at ANU, for example, and we can cool Canberra 10 degrees centigrade on a hot summer's day simply by rebuilding those porous soils, having water in that soil, having that water transpiring up through trees and vegetation, and those trees and that porous ground surface and its hydrology cooling regions. And we can see that where's Yarralumla, Narrabundah, where they are treed, will be massively cooler than the new suburbs, for example, Molonglo, 5 kilometres away.
Because, I mean, I'm just trying to do a mental map in my mind about the, you know, that a lot of the ACT is covered with concrete and asphalt and buildings and whatever, so there's not a lot of, apart from in the, you know, the southern part of the ACT, but Canberra itself, there's not a lot. I suppose we've got a lot more green space in some places, but there's not. It's not the majority of the land coverage, is it? So how?
Well, actually, I mean, it is in the sense that Canberra was designed by Marion Mahoney, Walter Burley Griffin, 120 years ago, as a landscape environment, and we're very fortunate that we do have a lot of green spaces and, you know, nature parks and stuff, but it's really a matter of, even at the more micro level, sort of nature strips, you know, are they just concreted or gravel or, you know, mowed down to more or less bare desert environments, or are they soft, impervious, can they infiltrate the water? It really comes to water, you see, like, do we get 100 raindrops? Do we get most of that into our soils, recharging our in-soil reservoirs, or do we let it run off instantly and create massive floods and erosion and degradation? So it's really creating the sponge to retain that water in the landscape. But we can do that meter by meter, you know, building block by building block, and we can fundamentally change it through direct community action, which is really the agency, the empowerment. Very positive message.
Yeah, so how do people do that on an individual level, on their properties or the nature strips in front of their
places?
Well,
I mean, on their properties, on their courtyard, whatever it is, just saying, all right, let's compost, you know, like letters of organic waste, let us accelerate, enhance the composting of that, let's build that friable soil. We can have swales that retain, slow down water runoff, but really just, keeping every raindrop infiltrating into the soil where it falls rather than concentrating into a culvert and then running off through a concrete storm drain. And if anything, in the last 50 years, that's where Canberra's gone wrong. We've put a lot of hard surface under concrete, asphalt. That's all running off. We've had concrete drains. And as we're realizing now, can we actually regreen and slow down that water, recharge landscapes? And we're doing that, for example, up north here in Canberra at Sullivan's Creek.
And there was work done a couple of years ago now down around near Fadden Pines and down the Isabella Ponds and so on, where they're putting those rain gardens to slow down the runoff.
Exactly.
That's the sort of thing you're talking
about. So every gutter can actually sort of end up into a rain garden infiltration pond. It only has to be 4 square metres or something that small, so that we've got water running down a gutter, so that now let's have it into an infiltration sort of pondage, which then goes into the subsoil, and that massively reduces runoff, flooding, but also it's massively cheaper, you know, compared to the infrastructure cost, the civil engineering cost of concrete, concrete everywhere.
Yeah, and of course it supports more, you know, vegetation over the top of it, which is adding to that.
Well, that's the point. Then it can support vegetation, the green, cooler canopy of trees, particularly in Canberra, the deciduous trees that give you that enormous shade benefit, but also because they're transpiring water, people don't realise that for trees to transpire, they need to turn water from liquid to gas. Every gram, every cubic centimetre of water turned to gas that's transpired needs 590 calories of heat energy to make that transformation from liquid to gas. But that heat has to come from the land surface, cooling that land surface by up to 10 degrees centigrade.
So where are the greatest areas of opportunity in the ACT?
Well, the greatest opportunity is, first of all, that community. I mean, the ACT community is very important because we're 500,000 people, very informed, very concerned. And, yeah, once we get the information out that, yes, we can cool Canberra, and that, yes, we can do that through this simple community grassroots action, we can actually have a profound effect. The other thing that's really important that we actually started on this is actually then that allows us to actually look at also our food production, right? Because if we've got vegetated, greener, hydrated landscapes, we are the local food production potentials. So rather than landscapes being hard, dry, arid for, you know, 9 months of the year, and we're just basically growing things for 10 days after rainfall, we can extend the longevity of green right across that agriculture and, of course, make that massively more productive and support, therefore, the food ecology of that community.
Because there's a number of sort of community gardens and the city farm in there, the Sierra Bomber wetlands or whatever. Is that the sort of thing you're talking about? Is that on a big enough scale?
Well, they are part of the sort of demonstration education objective, right? But yes, not that we're saying everybody has to be an urban farmer, but these are the sort of processes and principles which anyone can adopt. It's as simple as saying, yeah, look, instead of concreting everything, do I have pavers with spaces between that let water in, or do I have mulches, right? And can I just enhance the infiltration so every, as I said, every balcony, courtyard, block, nature strip, we can make it more pervious and collectively has an enormous, powerful effect cooling Canberra.
So really, you're countering that argument that some people promote that they're only one person, what they do doesn't make any difference. Exactly. We're only, as a country, we're only responsible for a fairly small proportion of emissions. What we do doesn't make any difference, so why do we bother? And you're saying we can do it, and it doesn't really cost you anything or not much.
Absolutely. And really, it's all about empowering people through education and smart, simple, proven eco-technologies, right? There's no questions, there's any number of demonstrations, proof, data, but it's really the education, but then the empowering young people particularly, yes, we can, but also, yes, we must.
Now, the ACT government has been doing quite a lot of tree planting lately. I know certainly in my area they've planted a number of trees and coming around to replace some of those that haven't quite made it, because, again, they're going into what are fairly hard and dry soils in a fairly harsh
Look,
climate.
As I said, Arthur Burley Griffin, it was designed as a landscape city, certainly in the 60s, 70s when we're explodingly expanding Canberra. We got dominated by concrete roads and what have you. But now, last 10 years or so, the ACT government recognises that, look, we've got to build buffering, resilience, regreening, rehydration and cooling into our landscape. And yes, here are very effective practical means confirmed. Like, as I said, this is work done by the Centre for Environment Population Health Canberra, ANU, and there's 10 degrees centigrade cooler. We don't need air conditioners. It comes back to the real point where we met, Jeff, is that, see, that 10 degrees centigrade cooler, it saves you billions of dollars a year in a city like Canberra in terms of the health effects. It's the heat stress and the older people and the hospitalization that results from, you know, these heat stress events. And if you can make habitat cooler, people can live there for longer, more comfortably, using less energy, that has enormous ecological but also health and environmental and economic benefit.
Because what's working against that in some ways, I suppose, is the urban infill that's going on in Canberra now, where a lot of the newer areas are much more densely populated, and there is that pressure in areas. Tuggeranong has, you know, like smaller houses on larger blocks versus the opposite in some of the newer areas.
No,
is that going
right,
to work against us?
But well-designed, eco-designed infill still can achieve this. As I said, we can do this in courtyards, swales, rainwater gardens, you know, gutters. If we're doing these smart things in that urban, as part of that urban infill, then we're still better off than basically a block that's been just bare, desiccated, mowed to with 1 centimetre and is just shedding water, 98% of the water that falls on it runs off, right? So it's not just a matter of density, it's a matter of just local design and having this sponge across wherever you can help build it.
So even the smallest efforts contribute, and it's the cumulative effect.
Absolutely.
And it is a cumulative
absolutely.
Effect.
Absolutely. I mean, we've done things, for example, one of our local golf courses, where we simply put in some swales, and these are just brush, you know, very simple. I mean, no earthworks, a simple brush scrub swales as sausages lying in arcs, infiltrating water, collecting sediment. And yeah, they have to use basically 40% of the rainwater, of the water they need now to keep their fairways green compared to previously. So enormous savings in terms of water use, and water is going to be the most critical strategic limiting resource. So they're saving, you know, massively in water use, at the same time creating a much greener, healthier, biodiverse environment.
Because that's the thing. I mean, you know, we're of an age, you maybe more so than me, where water was a free good, effectively. You know, you turned on the tap, it didn't really matter because it was almost free. Whereas now it is quite an expensive utility.
We're very fortunate because when the ACT was set up, yes, we had the Cotter, and we also reserved basically the Queensland River, you know, water supply for the ACT. But now we're using it all, so now instead of having abundant free water, and we've got some of the best water globally for a city, it's coming to the limits, and now efficient use and, yes, storage in our in-soil reservoirs and less, you know, need for less irrigation, etc., becomes critical, right?
Okay, so if we just, it's 2025 now, if you could project us through to 2035, can you describe what Canberra should look like or will look like in 2035 if we follow this path?
Right,
and
well, look, what we've been, well, as I said, we can see it around us. It just basically, and it's happening all the time. If you look at the Tuggeranong Valley now in terms of tree cover and shading and protection compared to 20 years ago, right? Chalk and cheese. So it's happening and people have got it. But if we can keep on understanding why and to the benefits of that, then, yeah, I would hope that you would say, look, 20 years' time, we've got effectively a shelter wood over most of our suburbs. Yeah, we've got infill, but that's been designed with these ecological values in mind. And most importantly, we've got a much healthier environment, cooler environment that can buffer climate extremes and, of course, have the resilience and biodiversity that benefits everyone. This actually comes to the point of the talk that we had at the ACT government sponsored 2 weeks ago, and that was really food, you know, the ACT's food system, because that's all part of it. If we can basically rehydrate the landscape, help our agricultural or the agriculture in the region, then, yeah, we can actually grow more healthy food and then, again, contribute massively to preventative health outcomes and then hard dollar savings for the government and the community. Okay, because at the moment we import nearly 100% of our food, industry-produced food, and then we basically could say, is there potential to build a viable regional food system with healthy food from healthy soils that will actually pay dividends in terms of community health, hospital savings.
So really by 2035 and then 2045 and whatever, we're looking at having more water available because we use less, waste less rather.
Yeah, well, certainly per capita we'll have far more water,
Less energy required because it's a cooler environment, so we're not burning as much electricity as necessary. More food available locally that's not being transported longer distances. And healthier people.
And the healthier people. And I think if we can keep people living in their homes for 10 years longer at a higher quality of life, it's $1,000 per person per day to be in hospital or under care, and yet we can save all that money. So the enormous savings at a household and a community level. But perhaps on top of all that is the other thing, we're going to have dangerous climate extremes from climate change, and so the buffering capacity, resilience capacity of that landscape to buffer those extremes to, you know, keep on going, compared to other areas which will just be, in a sense, flattened by those extremes.
And as there's greater awareness of all the interconnectedness of our ecosystems, and you're saying really it does come down at the most fundamental level to basically regenerating these soils, because everything hangs from that.
And we had it in 2003, we had it in 2019, and we haven't mentioned, we can't talk about this in much detail, wildfires, right? Mm. I mean, wildfires are a response to drought and fuel that hasn't been turned from litter, from fuel, into stable soil carbon. Mm-hmm. And we've got horrific wildfires. We see what's happening in California, etc. And yes, we can avoid those. We can turn that fuel into stable soil carbon sponge, mm-hmm. and through that, have that long-term security.
Okay, so where do people find out more if they want to get more involved and support it more?
Okay, well, look, there's a lot of websites and information basically on regenerative agriculture, soil, you know, soil regeneration, soil carbon, but most climate discussions are also going beyond just CO2 now and looking at how do we look at hydrology, because both it's dangerous hydrological extremes that will destroy, kill people, but it's also hydrology that can save us if we've got that soil, that water in our soils, in our landscape.
Mm. So, that, yeah, there's any number of websites and any number of public talks.
So get involved in that whole plethora of talks. There's a, I mean, not just our site, but, I mean, there's a whole, because we're just a small NGO. Yeah. But, yeah, all the CSIRO university sites, they're all coming to the same point. Mm. We must regenerate. We can regenerate, and we've got perhaps 10, 20 years to really get things happening.
Mm. And people can start doing that at the most micro of levels on their own property.
And really the message is to youth, yes, it's your future. Basically, all the tools are there. Here's the empowerment through local grassroots action. And that's where community radio and local community communications are so valuable.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you, Walter. That's been an extremely fascinating talk. Thanks for coming in. Mm-hmm. All right. I've been speaking with Walter Jenner, microbiologist, about regenerating Earth and what we can do at a local level to help regenerate our soils and start to solve some of the climate problems that we have got afflicting us at the moment.